I'm here today with Anna Revakovich from the École Polytechnique in Paris. She's doing her doctoral studies in arts and sciences at the École Polytechnique. And she has a very interesting background in the arts as well. And she is our artist in residence here at WPI's Global Lab this term. It's been a real delight having Anna here with us in the Global Lab. Anna, welcome. And we'd like to talk a little bit today about your art, your work at the interface of art and science, and some of the interesting projects that you've been doing. So maybe we can just start by learning a bit about your artistic background, some of your main work or the kinds of things that you've mainly been working on over the years. And then we'll talk a little bit after that about the fog water harvesting project.
Thanks, Steve. It's really great to be here at the Global Lab. And first of all, I just want to say thank you very much for inviting me. It's really been a pleasure to interact with different faculty members and students. I think I've encountered really amazing students here, and I think it's really hopeful, especially when we think and talk about the climate change. I think that this young energy is very, very important, and the people, students that I talk to and encounter, it's been very inspirational.
Great, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So about my artwork. So I'm an interdisciplinary artist, and for many, many years, I've been working with inflatable structures in the context of the environment, portable architecture, and the body. So during that time, I was very much influenced by different architectural groups from the 60s. Especially the British architectural group called Archigram. And I think that these groups already in the 60s were addressing a lot of issues that we still talk about today. Issues of the environmental issues, issues connected to alternative ways of living, issues of consumerism, and the Archigram. Archigram. They also invented concept of clothing for living in, and basically that meant of using structures that when they inflate, they change into a different environment, and that concept inspired me to create three prototypes of three different dresses. So one is called the sleeping bag dress, and it's a kimono type dress that when it inflates, it changes into a cylindrical container in which one can sleep. Then there's a parachute dress, so self-explicatory. When it inflates, you can change this into a parachute, sort of female James Bond. And another dress, it's called lifesaver dress, which is basically when it inflates, it creates a ring that you can float on water. Yeah. So from these three prototypes, I created two, but especially the one that I did the most of, that's a sleeping bag dress. And I wanted to be very much off the grid when I was designing and making that dress. So I used a small solar panel and connected to batteries that were incorporated in the dress itself, and then use a small computer fan for inflation. And I did walking performances in this dress and in different cities, different places. And for example, in Mexico City, I invited people to take me to their favorite places in the city, and I let people occupy those places inside the dress, and I also had conversations inside the dress that I recorded about what it meant to them to be inside this cocoon in different places and what it felt like experiencing that, being inside. And other places, other than that, I walked on the street and just inflated different locations at different times and had different interactions with strangers on the streets. And that was in Brussels, in Toulouse, in France, and in Tallinn, Estonia. So there were the four locations. And then in the gallery setup, I made a replica of the cylinder on a larger scale. So the sleeping bag dress was the size of it. It was a body size. So, and the replica was kind of almost like three times bigger. So people could go inside and lie inside this replica, the big cylinder, and watch the documentation of video performances.
So it's performance art in addition to installation art, in a way. It's meant to engage actively.
Yes. From the very beginning, all my art process was very much oriented towards, well, how we can say, interaction or participation. And I think it kind of came out of a desire that as an artist or as a person who was educated in arts, you always, well, actually for a majority of people, you always, when you go to a museum, there are always the signs, please do not touch. And part of me really wanted, in a sense, to rebel against this, please do not touch. And I wanted to people to touch. I wanted to people to wear. I wanted to people be inside. I wanted to people participate. So all that was very much part of my desire when making the artworks. And yeah, before, for quite some time, I used rubber latex as a material to make artworks. And that came from a desire to explore the sense of touch, because rubber latex is one of the material like the closest that resembles skin, and skin is one of the largest body organ that through which we experience touch. So I made, for example, I painted a room in my apartment in Montreal. I cover entire room in rubber latex, painting it multiple layers so I could build up a thickness. And then I peeled it off and I end up with this skin of the room. And then I use another layer of latex to connect two layers together so the entire room could go up, being inflated. But then when you walk inside, so I let people to walk inside this inflated room. So when you step inside, well, there was actually a few interesting and a kind of funny experiences. But when you walk inside, you see the real imprint of the room, because rubber latex has this amazing property that can pick up everything. So including cracks on the wall, of course, you could see the wooden floor, you know, with dirt inside, you know, it was just very bodily and very kind of human experience. But it was also funny because it was a room, you know, full of air. And because it was all inflated, it kind of looked nice and puffy. So a lot of times people would kind of dive into it and they didn't realize that rubber latex is also very stretchy. So then they would hit the floor. Or if they try to walk in the inflated room, it's actually quite difficult to walk in the inflated room. It's kind of like walking, like treading through water or in snow, in deep snow. So it's very easy to lose your balance. And then in a room full of air, there's nothing to hold on to. I mean, you can hold on to air, but then you fall.
Right, right. So your art has a lot of intentionality behind it in terms of what you want to invoke, I think. Did you hear from people about their experience, and did it match what you anticipated people would come up for people?
Yes, of course. But that in my intentionality, I see it more as a platform of set, like I set up a platform for interaction. And then I let it happen, whatever happens. So my intentionality in different artworks, but it never went to the point that I wanted to, in a sense, control how people experience that. And because of that, I had different reactions. And some people loved it, some people hated it, some people, you know, like with my artwork when I did an inflatable, I made a hydroponic system, and I invited people to donate their breath to the plants that I planted inside. And for example, that was a kind of, I like to imagine as a larger experiment of how human breath, of how humans can influence plants' growth. But after the exhibition, so there were plants inside, edible plants. And after the exhibition that lasted about 8 weeks, so about 2 months, I made a salad that I served to people. And that was very interesting, that some people really had a huge objections to eating this salad because they were saying that I don't know who was blowing and what kind of breath was that. So yeah, I think I never tried to, you know, in a sense, set up specific reaction. I let the reactions to kind of happen as they, yes, from different background, yeah.
So then your work has taken you to the École Polytechnique in Paris, and you've been working particularly on the fog water harvesting project. Can you tell us a little bit about that project?
Maybe before that, I'm going to say how I got to Polytechnique. I got to Polytechnique on a cloud.
Really? Do tell.
Because I made an artwork that is called The Cloud, and it's an inflatable object in the shape of the cloud. And then I invite people to pump water to the cloud. And then when people pump water to the cloud becomes heavier and it comes down. And then at some point, the water mechanism inside overspills, and then the cloud rains. And then when it empties itself from water and becomes lighter, it goes up. So it's kind of a hydrological cycle of water, and also pointing out that we are all weather makers.
Right, the human agency,
yes.
Similar to growing the plants. I
yes.
like that.
Mm-hmm. So I did a presentation of this artwork at the symposium called Water in the Air that took place at IMEHA. It's a center of art and research center in Marseille in France. And this is where I met a scientist, Jean-Marc Chomas, who later invited me to come to Polytechnique and work on a project of collecting water from fog. So when I came to Polytechnique, I started to work with another scientist very closely, Camille Duprat. And maybe to explain a little bit what involves what collecting water or fog is,
please,
in general.
Yeah.
So in different parts of the world where there is very little precipitation and very little groundwater, fog, which is actually cloud close to the ground, becomes the only source of water available, and whole ecosystems are being developed based on that availability of water from fog. And in those areas, like in coastal areas along South America, like Chile and Peru, a lot of times they are desert areas. So in Chile, it's the Atacama Desert or west coast of Africa, like in Morocco, also Namibia. So in those places, fog is very important as a source of water. So in this project, the environmental concern is very present in the sense of how to address the global issue of diminishing water sources in the world due to climate change, to industrial agriculture, and also proliferation of water bottles, branded water bottles everywhere. So water sources are diminishing or being polluted or, yeah. So thinking about fog as an alternative source of water, and basically it's not a new technology, it's been existing for quite some time. And as I find out when I was in Chile, that indigenous people there already long time ago used skins to put in the path of the wind to collect some water they were trying to collect. And later as well, fishermen noticed as well that they had a collection of water on their nets when they were drying. A company that spread this technology on a kind of global scale, on a larger scale, it's a Canadian company. It's called FogQuest. And they started different projects in South America, in Africa, in Himalayas as well, Nepal, to help local communities to get water from fog. So technology per se is very simple. Wind is an important factor of it. So fog basically is a cloud that contains a small water droplets already there in the air. So it's a matter of wind bringing those small water droplets against a substrate. And then that produces a coalescence of water droplets which then they grow and become heavier and they drain. But one of the problems, so the common fabric that is being used in this process is so-called Rachel mesh. And the common problem that is being experienced that there is a lot of clogging. And then when the growing water droplets clog the mesh, it prevents them from drainage. So in our approach of getting together and working with scientists, we wanted to address this issue and we wanted to see how we can optimize this process. And when I started to work with Camille Duprat, she was very much involved in the research of capillary filaments and capillary elastic filaments and capillary forces.
And what kind of scientist? Or is she a scientist?
Yes, she's a scientist. She's a researcher at the Fluid Dynamics Laboratory at Polytechnique in Paris. So we really worked side by side. She was showing me what experiments she has been doing. And I was, in a sense, reacting or interacting to what I was seeing or what I was being exposed to. And through this process, we came up with a concept, a kind of new paradigm, in a sense, that instead of using a mesh, which is always a grid, we decided to use and focus on parallel flexible fibers. And then we sort of made different experiments together to see and observe how our proposition. So the image that it really came from our interaction was the image of a forest. So it was a forest of flexible fibers. And that was kind of a metaphor that that was our inspiration. And when we were doing different experiments, also we were producing artworks together because we used the equipment that was being available there, which involved a fast camera, which takes up to 10,000 images per second. And we produce our first artwork, which is called Through the Looking Mist. And then it sort of went, the research went side by side. So it was both artistic and scientific research that involved another installation that is called Misty Way, which involves three large-scale screens made from parallel fibers. And onto which we projected a video of water droplets inside the fog that were filmed with the huge magnification. And obviously working with the camera, the fast camera, it allows you to show you things that are invisible to human eyes. So we captured those water droplets inside the fog. And then when we projected onto the screen, we got a double projections, so it created a very immersive environment where, and we also work with a composer, electronic music composer, who came to the lab, recorded specific sounds, he recorded different sounds that he could collect from our experiments, from setups, etc., that we had, and he made a composition for this installation. So it was very immersive installation because you were surrounded by lights, sound, and wind, in a sense, gentle blow of the fans that were inside the room. And it was very special because people, as an artist, I can say that it's not necessarily always that you see people spending a long time in with artworks or in installations in general, just because we live in the culture that is, we are so, you know, bombarded by so many images and things that our attention span is very short. So it was very special to see people actually staying there in this room for a very long time.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. It's just so different from what we sometimes are assume in terms of a real distinction between art and science. And here you've really collapsed these ways of knowing and ways of being together. Can you speak to the broader motivation or philosophy, either of the École Polytechnique or this broader field of art science? And what is the motivation behind it? Is it to educate in different ways, to show people experiencing it, or is it about discovery, or what underlies that that bridge?
I think it's the it's a desire to really work interdisciplinary and kind of break the traditional modes of disciplines and kind of divisions, specializations, which actually really prevent us to see things. I like to say that we need to kind of flex a muscle, that I see art kind of like a flexing muscles that allow us to see something very close, but at the same time to zoom out and see something from a larger perspective. And I think the field of specialization, they create a scenario where you have to focus on something very specific. So you're kind of like become myopic, looking at things very closely, and you have to go deeper and deeper. And sometimes in that approach, you lose the sense of a larger picture. You lose the sense of touch with a broader view. And I think through this art and science collaboration, we are trying to also break notions kind of that, that, for example, art is sensible and science is not sensible, or that, creative is art and science is not. So we're kind of trying to blur the boundaries between all this kind of static and conventional way that people see things. Because I think that we are all creative. So creativity is not a sign necessarily to art. Scientists, well, basically we're all creative, but the question is, what do we do with this creativity? And therefore, both scientists and artists and anybody else, chefs and cooks and hairdressers and everybody else can be creative. But it's more within the institutionalized and kind of the division that exists within educational system of knowledge, and we are very much trained in it, and this is the very much way we see it. And it's we're really facing a big issues in the world of the climate change, social unrest, and I think the only way that we can face those big issues is by working together, by collaborating together. So therefore, breaking the boundaries of the specific specialization or specific disciplines and bringing people from different disciplines together to address larger issues.
It's wonderful, Anna. And I've seen your artwork, so I know that it results in some really amazing, beautiful works and informative as well. So what are some of the challenges that you face in working in this really interesting interdisciplinary context?
I think the challenges really exist with sort of changing people's perspective and changing people's way of seeing things, both on the inside and outside. On the inside, meaning even within collaboration, and what I think I've already described outside how it works, but within the collaboration, I think the challenge, there were multiple challenges. I think that one of kind of the first one we have to address is differences in languages, and it's something that we take for granted that being educated and being specialized in different disciplines, we develop a kind of specific language that we operate in. And so communication becomes a little bit, it's kind of disjointed in a sense, because we can still use the same language. It's not as, I'm not talking about sort of, different languages like French, English, or Polish, or Ukrainian, or any other. But I'm talking about that each discipline brings the specific way of communicating and using language. So both of us can speak English and yet sort of misunderstand each other because of those kind of niche language that is being developed, and we take it for granted. And it's so easy to think that the other person understands when they don't understand, and the other person thinks, well, that's what it means, but actually the other person meant something completely different. So those miscommunications are very, very often. happen. And another thing, I think the most important thing in this equation of the art-science collaboration, I would like to put emphasis on the word collaboration. I think this is the most important factor, because it really, it's, for me, it's very similar to a relationship in which basically two or more people come together and they have to be open to each other. They really have to have a desire to listen to the other person, to understand another person, and also not sort of prioritize and not put values. So we cannot say in that moment that all science is more credible or science is more, you know, important as art. In the other way, we cannot, as I said, say that creativity only is with arts and not with science. So it really requires a certain openness to accept that there are different ways of looking at the world and experiencing the world from the different perspective.
Mm-hmm. And if you can do it successfully, I imagine it really opens everyone's mind and you probably learn a lot.
Yes, I think so. I think so. But it requires still a lot of work, because I think institutionally speaking, it's not necessarily so easy, or also within the system, you know. Both ways, I think, although one way I think is stronger than the other, in the sense, you know, can scientists be an artist? Yes. Can artists become a scientist? So this kind of questions of societal acceptance and credibility, or even within institutions as well, it's and funding as mm-hmm. well.
What have you found in regards to that question? Can an artist be a scientist, and can an artist be a scientist, and can a scientist be an artist?
I think from my experience, it's easier understood and acceptable when a scientist becomes an artist than the other way around. And I also have experienced more people asking the questions, well, what does art brings into science, than the other way around, meaning what science brings to art. Somehow what science brings to art is more kind of acceptably understood as the other way around. So I think maybe that points out to different value systems that society, how societies view, for example, science, what value is being assigned to science, and what value a society assigns to art, for example.
Well, here at WPI, an engineering university, how do you think we can embrace art differently, or in engineering education more generally? What is the role of art?
I think it would be amazing to bring art closer to engineering. And actually, there's lots of commonalities between engineering and arts, because they both involve of kind of making things, right? So I think there is a lot of intersection, but it would be very important to incorporate art into engineering education, because I think it opens and brings a different set of questions and let people reflect in a different way, rather than training engineers sort of just as technicians. So as people specialize in a specific, you know, part of knowledge. So I think by bringing arts into the education, we can enlarge the way that they are being, the way they see world. And through that enlargement of the different way of seeing the world, I believe that that would produce a different kind of engineers, yeah, different kind of people that just see the world from a larger perspective and not just technical or technological or innovation as well.
Which, as you said, is especially important as we try to address some really critical problems in the world like climate change.
Yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm. What is the nature of the STEAM movement in, I know you live and work in both Montreal and Paris. Is the STEAM, STEM plus the arts, is that a big movement in those places as well?
I have to say that I'm going to make a comment about Polytechnique in Paris. No, there's not so much talk about STEAM or STEM, STEAM. Somehow I feel this is more a North American approach. So in Canada, it's definitely more kind of, there's more talk about it than maybe in Paris at called Polytechnique. I'm not sure if I can say about other institutions there, but definitely not so much at called Polytechnique, no.
Mm-hmm, okay. So what's next for you, Anna? You're working on the fog water harvesting project still. What do you see on the horizon?
Well, I'm just finishing my PhD at Ecole Polytechnique, and I will have to turn myself into a writer. So explore a different discipline. And for the next, before that, I'm organizing Garden to Sky Water Conference in Paris that will take place in June. And it's an interdisciplinary conference that is trying to bring different people from different disciplines, artists, scientists, anthropologists, philosophers, gardeners, to talk about atmospheric water and also our relationship to environment. But after that, I'll be focusing on writing, and after then we'll see.
Okay, that's great, Anna. Well, good luck with the conference. That sounds really amazing, and good luck with your writing, and best wishes with your work. And thanks again for being with us for the last week or so.
Thank you very much. It's been really great being here, and it's been a great experience. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Anna.